Morning comes from Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 16, and it reads, "As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other. Just as God has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body. And be thankful. Let the words of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom. And with gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God." There ends the scripture reading. Once upon a time in a strange land with even stranger people, there existed a village that contained within it a most peculiar and extraordinary place. Before I describe this remarkable place, however, I must first say more about the land and the people so that you can truly understand just how magical and wonderful this place is. As I said, the people were strange. To be sure, the village people were normal in many ways. Some were skinny, some were not so skinny. Some were tall and some were not so tall. Some were beautiful and handsome, some were, well, of average beauty and handsomeness. Yet these villagers had eyes that were different than the kinds of eyes you and I have. They looked like normal eyes. Some were blue-eyed and some were brown-eyed, some were green-eyed and some were purple-eyed. But it was their vision that was different. They had an uncanny ability to see two things at once. For example, they saw rain, but at the same time they saw sunshine. As a result, the weather forecaster never simply said it was raining. Rather, such weather was forecasted as either sun with rain clouds or rain clouds with sun, depending on the severity of the rain clouds. As I also said, these village people lived in a strange land. It was strange in the sense of being a place where the normal standards of decency did not always apply. You may know people who like to complain about taxes. They'll rail against the tax system that allows a wealthy few to hoard their gold coins and never pay their fair share. You may know people who like to complain about pollution. They'll rail against the pumping of toxic chemicals into the air, water, and ground. You may also know people who like to complain about there never being enough good-paying jobs. They'll rail against the downsizing and wage cuts as corporate execs make more and more money for themselves. Well, the people in this village complained, and they railed, and they had a right to complain, and they had a right to rail. They had even more of a right than you or I. Life in the village could be downright miserable for many of them, worse than it is for many in our society, if that's possible to believe. Yet despite all the legitimate concerns and gripes that these strange people in a strange land had, the village had a peculiar and extraordinary place that seemed to defy what one might expect in a society with so many causes of consternation. Upon a hill on the very edge of the village was a strange-looking building known as the Church of Grateful Living. What made this church so uniquely special and magical was how it drew people from the village like pieces of iron drawn to a magnet. Those who came kept coming back as if the church was a cold spring of water in a vast and empty desert. Moreover, the people who came seemed to leave transformed, rejuvenated, and ready to face the world with its problems and all. Neither the village nor the entire strange land in which it resided had ever seen anything like it previously. Soon a team of researchers from a local university began studying the phenomenon. They conducted interviews. They followed church members home and took notes as the members made meals, shopped at stores, talked with neighbors, went to the bathroom, and generally lived life. In one study, the authors announced their results as follows. "Our groundbreaking research has shown that such grateful people experience higher levels of positive emotions such as joy, enthusiasm, love, happiness, and optimism, and that the practice of gratitude as a discipline protects a person from the destructive impulses of envy, resentment, greed, and bitterness. We've discovered that a person who experiences gratitude is able to cope more effectively with everyday stress and may recover and may show increased resilience in the face of trauma-induced stress. They may recover more quickly from illness and the benefit of having greater physical health. Our research has led us to conclude that experiencing gratitude leads to increased feelings of connectedness, improved relationships, and even altruism. We have also found that when people experience gratitude, they feel more loving, more forgiving, and closer to God. Among the interviews done with members of the church, there are some interesting case studies, especially among those who initially resisted coming. One of the members is a noted local social activist named Scott Janowski, who always seems to be working on a campaign to save the world from the dangers of a particular pollutant. He was certainly someone who liked to rail against the powers that be. In general, he had a critical view of the world. For a long time, he charged that the Church of Grateful Living was just a cult for, quote, the ongoing self-help fad of positive thinking. He declared that positive thinking was the new opium of the masses. He reasoned that if people believe that the problem isn't the polluters, but instead their own failure to think positive, then no one will ever rise up and protest. Pollution will just get worse and worse. Meanwhile, he argued that the adherents of positive thinking will bounce back and forth from an understandable depression over the deteriorating state of the world to an optimism that has all the staying power of a painful, forced smile. To make matters worse, he asserted that depression for such persons is greater than it would otherwise be because in the midst of their depression, they blame themselves for not thinking positive. As sharp as he was in his criticisms of others, however, Scott slowly came to realize that his own coping mechanisms for dealing with the deplorable state of world affairs were not much better. For example, he seemed to suffer from perpetual burnout. He would get angry and fired up over injustice, but he had trouble sustaining the fire without feeling like he wasn't being consumed by the fire. He still felt that the righteous fire of indignation was necessary to provide the spark and drive for his engine, but he also came to feel that he needed something else to sustain him. It was at this time that he came to know Rebecca Snuhauser. Rebecca was a member of the Church of Grateful Living, and Scott noticed that she was a strong participant in campaigns against pollution. Moreover, she often seemed to have an uplifting spirit that others wanted to be around. One day, as they were driving to a rally at another village, Scott confronted her with his criticisms of her alleged cult. Rebecca laughed at his assertions and said she was a realist and was no pie-in-the-sky optimist. She declared that it was a realistic view of life that made her and members of her grateful church grateful. She explained that gratitude was not some form of happyology or positive thinking. Instead, it involved the ability to recognize and acknowledge that goodness exists under even the worst that life offers. She asserted that it was perfectly possible to rebel against the worst of tyrants and still wake up in the morning glad to simply be alive. Besides, she reasoned, how miserable would we be if we never took note of our small successes and never celebrated the victories we do achieve. That Sunday, Scott made his first visit to Rebecca's church. Another fascinating case study pertains to a man who was once an avowed and ardent atheist. To this day, Ronald Jingemeyer can't make sense of most notions of God. For him, nothing in his experience has ever led him to believe in the supernatural. So anything that evokes a powerful force beyond everyday existence, a force that purportedly heals people and causes hurricanes, simply seems irrational. Interestingly enough, however, it was an intellectual crisis that led him to the Church of Grateful Living. Along with his boyfriend at the time, he began keeping a gratitude journal. At first, Ronald thought it wasn't his kind of thing, but he did it anyway. Curiously, he soon began to feel much better about life as he found himself appreciating the outdoors more, appreciating friends and family more, appreciating food more, and appreciating life in general much more than ever. He couldn't argue that against the fact that the journal was having a beneficial impact on his life. But he was deeply troubled by something. He observed that gratitude is always directed outward. When people are grateful, they're grateful to other people, to God, to animals, but never to oneself. This seemed only natural to Ronald, but he was stumped by the simple question of to whom some of his own gratitude should be directed. Sure, he was sometimes grateful for his mom, for the support she gave him, or a coworker for helping him solve a problem with a client. But what about when he saw a beautiful flower on the side of the road? What about when he simply woke up feeling excited about the day? In such instances, he couldn't help but to feel grateful. He would not have wanted it any other way, but it didn't seem right to be giving thanks to a flower or to give thanks to some vague, amorphous notion of life with a capital L. Ronald was a deeply intellectual person, so he actually stayed awake at night, disturbed by his quandary over how to conceive of gratitude. He became so distressed and agitated by it that in desperation for answers, he finally called the pastor of the Church of Grateful Living to schedule an appointment. When they met, Ronald immediately laid out his intellectual struggle. In response, Pastor Ellen Berkowitz sympathetically observed that Ronald was bumping his head against the great mysteries of existence. She explained that there were a wide range of views of God. Some were supernatural and otherworldly, while some involved an embrace of mystery and a belief that the divine was interwoven into everyday life in such forms as love and compassion. She feared that for her, the intellectual core of faith is choosing to believe that life has meaning despite the ultimate mystery of life. She added that at the same time, for her, the emotional core of faith is gratitude. She declared, in spite of the mystery of life's origin and meaning, I still feel inexplicably drawn towards thanksgiving for the gift of life itself. There's no scientific or historical proof that someone or some being gave the gift of life. And yet I'm utterly thankful for it, and God is the one I thank. I have found that nothing else satisfies my deep human need to give thanks. From that day on, Ronald decided he would no longer fear a mystery, but would instead embrace it. For him, it was intellectual humility that ultimately led to faith. And it was the blissful feeling of gratitude that kept him coming back Sunday after Sunday to the Church of Grateful Living. For those who attend the church, it seems impossible to imagine life without gratitude. Indeed, for them, to live with gratitude at the center of life seems like the only way to survive and thrive in an often difficult world. Church members are brimming with thanks. A sense of appreciation spills over from one member to the next. The expression of faith has a joyful energy as a result. Not surprisingly, at the Church of Grateful Living, they have a strong music program. The emphasis on music is apparent before one even walks through the doors of the sanctuary. Above the entrance is a quote from Colossians that reads, "With gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God." And that, my friends, is the story of a fairy tale church in a strange land with an even stranger people. Amen.